Well, hi everybody. I'm Beattie Cohn-Vratos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. For those of you who've been listening, and I can hardly believe it's almost 10 years, I am a psychotherapist. Yes, one of those, a sex therapist. I'm also the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships. Believe me, it is a book that I wish that I had had when I first started my own dating and relationship life. The book is For Better, For Worse, Forever: Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And what this book does is that it teaches us all exactly how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. You know, I say this all the time, but when you think about this, we assess every single thing in our life. We are comparison shopping constantly, whether or not we're talking about phones or computers or lipsticks or face creams. And yet when we think about relationships, the term assessment, the term evaluation, it very rarely is a term that would come up in any typical kind of conversation. And yet it really does need to be talked about a lot, and not just talked about, but really put into action. You know, every week, every month, I continue to follow the research in the world of divorces and extramarital affairs and abuse, teenage abuse, domestic violence. And what I'm seeing, and it is so disconcerting for me as a wife, as a mother, as a psychotherapist, that the statistics are continuing to soar. I mean, if we're looking at divorce as an example, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. For second marriages, that rate is 67%. And one would really hope, the more times that we marry, that we would actually learn something. And yet the divorce statistic for third marriages happens to be between 71% and 73%. And there's been so much talk, there's been so many shows, there's been so many books written about domestic violence. It is a subject that fortunately has become much, much more mainstream in the media. And yet, let's look at the reality. Let's look at the reality of what is going on. Three women are still being killed every single day by their intimate partner. I look at the teenage dating violence statistics. 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students report having experienced physical dating violence in the last year. When I think about when I grew up in Winnipeg, Canada, granted it was a few years ago, either we were blind, but I mean, nobody ever talked about it. Of course, that doesn't mean that some of this may not have been happening, but these statistics, they're very, very, very frightening. 1 in 8 females and 1 in 26 male high school students report having experienced sexual dating violence in the last year. And if we're looking at college students, 25%, between 20 to 45% of students that are in college are reporting physical dating violence. So what is it? What is it actually that's going on? And much, much, much more importantly, what are we missing and what are we going to do about it? And I think that more and more schools are really starting to see the importance of incorporating mental health into the school system, not just when there is a crisis. And I think last year I told you that I was doing some consulting at East Hampton High School in East Hampton, New York, and the health teacher and I, we were team teaching, and we were talking about all the unromantic and unsexy issues when it came to relationships, when it talked about sex that the kids really need, they need to think about, they need to learn about, and hopefully they are going to be able, through our teachings, to be able to live healthier and happier lives when it comes to their, well, when it comes to themselves, and also when it comes to their relationships. But again, and you know, for years and years, I've been giving workshops around the country, and I am so clear, and I would love, love, love to hear what you have to think about this. For me, there are three things that actually have to happen if we are going to ever hope to have a successful relationship with anyone. And the first thing, of course, we need to be in a good place ourselves, emotionally, psychologically, despite the fact that we all have lots of ups and downs, you know, in our lives. And we have to be willing. We have to really be willing, as hard as it is, to work through the things that happened and didn't happen, perhaps in our early lives, in our own family of origin, so that we need to be okay. We need to be okay. And I haven't seen the Barbie movie that everybody is talking about, but from bits and pieces of conversation that I've heard and that I've, you know, been reading about, is that Barbie is supposed to be representing a strong woman. And whether or not you are a strong woman or a strong man, or whether you consider yourself non-binary, we need to be okay. And that the relationship, this is something I used to tell my daughter all the time when she was growing up, was that the relationships need to be the icing on the cake. And we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to be solid. So that's really step number one. And then, of course, step number two, again, you know, it's amazing to me, all the books and the podcasts and the relationship coaches and love coaches, and yet people are still, they're not clear. And I'm not pronouncing judgment, and I'm not blaming anyone, but we have to be honest with ourselves, and we have to do a much, much better job in actually learning the ingredients that go into a successful relationship. And then number three is my formula. And believe me, my friends, this is not about selling books. This is about being very, very pragmatic when it comes to who we are going to let into our lives. And I know, I mean, I was the same way. We all want to fall in love, and we want it to be romantic, and we want it to be lustful. But the fact is, we need to be willing to do a really in-depth, accurate assessment of who this person is and who this person is not before we decide whether or not we're going to move in, before we decide whether or not we want to make a lifelong commitment. Like a marriage. And you know, for those of you who've been listening to me talk about this for all these years, I was very dismayed at my research findings. And I did the research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut areas, that it takes about a year. It is going to take you about a year to use this assessment format. Now, clearly, if you are seeing a lot of red flags, and the person is abusive, and the communication is terrible, and the person doesn't know how to solve problems and doesn't want to solve problems, it is incapable of emotional intimacy and physical intimacy, and if the sex is terrible, I mean, obviously, you are not going to stay in a relationship for a year. But the fact is that we have to slow down. We are living in this really fast, fast-paced world. there is information that is flowing. I was saying to my husband, Jim, last night, because, he's involved. He's a sociologist. He's a host of The Radical Imagination, which is a television show. So we're busy people. And we oftentimes, of course, have to prepare for shows, I have to prepare for my therapy patients. And last night I said to him, I really felt like just throwing the computers outside of the window on Riverside Drive. Now, obviously, that was not something I was going to do. But it's true that there's so much information that is coming at us that it's so, so hard to really discern what's okay, what's not okay, the pluses and the minuses of artificial intelligence. I mean, it is mind-blowing. And what I find, and I don't know what you find, is that I need to be centered. I need quiet. I need peace as much as I can possibly, really find it. So again, we need to be very, very careful. And I know I go on and on and on about who we are going to let into our lives. And in that way, we are going to empower ourselves. And most importantly, we are going to be able, hopefully, to keep ourselves safe. And is that really not the bottom line? So even though I felt like I wanted to throw the computer out the window last night, I couldn't. I'm the advice columnist for Dad's Papers in the Hamptons and Palm Beach, and I love writing the columns, but sometimes I too need a break. I've been an expert guest, of course, in national radio and TV for many, many, many years. And as I say, I love to host the Ask Beatty Show. And this is going on to 10 years since I first met with Dr. Gary Null when I moved to New York. And in my spare time, in quotes, I have a busy private practice here in New York City. And also in East Hampton. So people who've never listened to the show, they always ask me, so what is this? What is this Ask Beatty Show really all about? And it's really about one word. It is about empowerment. I want you to feel empowered about what is going on in your life, in the world of mental health, in the world of relationships, and in the world of sexuality. So as you know, we talk about all the things that we can hopefully do to improve the quality of our lives and the quality of our relationships, the mental health, the sexuality. And I have a mantra that sometimes it's difficult to put into practice. I don't want to come across as the expert who has the perfect solutions, because as we know, there are no perfect solutions, period. But I do have a mantra. It probably was taught to me. I think it was taught to me. I was unconsciously aware of what was going on when I was a little girl, of course. But my mantra is really to be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the things that get in the way of our being able to live a good life. It is so easy to deny and avoid and blame and take too many pills and eat too much and not really deal with the central issues in our life that are really robbing us of our joy. And we deserve to have good lives. We deserve to be happy. And yet there are always things that are going to come up, whether or not it's a job loss or there are financial issues or whether or not we're talking about racism and income inequality. There are always things. And yet, the one thing that I've always tried to do as a practitioner is to try to build a team mindset so that you don't feel that you are alone, because it's way too difficult in our lives to navigate the ups and downs and curves and information and misinformation that are constantly, constantly coming our way. And when Gary Nall and I first talked about my doing the Ask Beatty show here in New York City, we had hoped it was going to really be the old Ask Beatty show that I've done on many mainstream radio stations, beginning with ABC Radio. And I wanted it to be a call-in counseling show. I still want it to be a call-in counseling show because I know that you're listening and I know that there are questions and I know that you have issues like we all have issues. So what I would like to do is to continue to encourage you to call me. I mean, the show is live right now here in New York. And the number is 888-874-4888. And no question is too silly or too stupid or too dumb or too obvious, so that we could actually begin to dialogue with each other, because there's so many issues that people that we're all struggling with on a day-to-day basis. And I think here you have an opportunity from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in New York every single week to call me, and we can talk about what's working, about what's not working. So again, don't be shy, because I know that many of you would like to perhaps even meet me in person. Well, even though that's probably not going to be possible for the vast majority of people, at least we can talk. At least we can Zoom. So again, the number at the Progressive Radio Network is 888-874-4888. So now, my friends, it is time for our weekly check-in, our weekly how are you honestly doing checkup. And let's begin with mental health. So how are you doing? Are you generally happy with what's going on in your life and your relationships? Again, remember, nobody is perfectly happy. We all go through so many, so many ups and downs and curves. But seriously, if you are finding that the negative days are really outnumbering the positive days, and it goes on for weeks and months, and for some people, for years, I really, really hope that I can inspire and encourage and motivate you to then be willing to reach out and ask for help. You know, there was a very interesting article in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, and I have this collection of articles from the Times and from other sources, and I wanted to share this with you right now. And the heading is Spot Anxiety Disorders with a Few Questions. Medical experts urge doctors to screen adults under 65 for signs of nagging stress. Well, I think it should begin. It should begin when children are five and six, and maybe even younger when they're starting school. And the thing that I found so, well, strange was that why would you stop screening adults who were over 65? Who are typically dealing with a lot of physical and emotional things, including loss and death. And so I was a little bit perplexed, but the article really does capture a lot of things that we should think about. So the writer goes on and asks the question, how much anxiety is too much? So a couple of weeks ago, a panel of influential medical experts recommended for the first time, and it should have been done a long, long time ago, that doctors screen all adult patients under 65 for symptoms of anxiety. So what are the new guidelines? Well, they were issued by the U.S. Preventative Service Task Force after a draft was released in September. So this is September of last year. And earlier in 2022, the experts had made similar recommendations for children ages 8 to 18, which is something that is really, really important to be doing. Millions of Americans, as you probably know, struggle with anxiety. About one in five adults, that's a lot, in the United States has an anxiety disorder, according to the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And having some anxiety, we all, by the way, have anxiety from time to time. It isn't necessarily, in quotes, a problem. But experts say an internal alarm system benefits us in various ways, helping to improve our performance or recognition of danger and encouraging us to be more conscientious. And that's okay. We're anxious, and we may be anxious for all the right reasons. So in addition, it's common to feel more anxious naturally when faced with stressful, you know, events like starting a new radio show or starting a new job or experiencing the death of a loved one or moving to a new city. These are all normal feelings of anxiety that the majority of us experience. However, anxiety can become more pervasive and overwhelming. So the real question, and this is something that I want to answer for you, is how do you distinguish the protective anxiety from the more problematic anxiety? And what do you do if you're 65 years or older and have been feeling anxious? Well, if you're 65 years and older, and if you're feeling anxious, you probably visit a doctor from time to time. And it's so important, even though the visits are so short. And I have to tell you that in all of my years, in all of the years that I have lived, never once has any doctor, not a general practitioner, not a gynecologist, not anybody, ever asked me about my mental health, how I was feeling. Did I experience depression or anxiety or any other kinds of mental health issues? It has never happened. And I don't believe that it's because they know that I'm a psychotherapist and sex therapist. So this is where we, the consumer, we have to be smart, we have to be proactive, and we have to be brave and give ourselves permission to bring up the tough subjects when we go to see our doctor. Because the way things work with the insurance world, if you're lucky, you're only going to have a very, very short amount of time that you're going to be spending with your doctor. And so that if you're feeling that the depression is not lifting and it hasn't lifted for a long period of time, or that you may be having panic attacks and your anxiety is really, really getting in the way of your life, we need to let the physician who we're seeing know what is going on. And even though the appointment time may not allow for a long, lengthy, in-depth conversation about that part of what's going on in our lives, at least then there could be a follow-up, or there could be a referral. So an important question is, how do you know if your anxiety is in need of evaluation? And here we have some answers. Anxiety can cause people to try to avoid situations, right? You're feeling really, really, really anxious, so you're not going to want to go out. You're not going to want to talk to anybody. You're not going to want to do anything that trigger or worsen their symptoms. Some signs to look out for include a sense of dread or worry that won't go away, or trouble sleeping or eating. Other symptoms may include restlessness, a sense of fear or doom, increased heart rate, sweating, trembling and trouble concentrating. Now, obviously, there could be something physical going on as well, which is why you need to check it out with AMD. So if you feel that the worry, and you know yourself the best. So if you feel that the worry is too much and that it starts affecting your work, your relationship, or other parts of your life, or if you're feeling depressed, that is the time to speak with your primary care provider or a mental health professional, because the anxiety may get worse if you don't ask for help. Okay. And there are a variety of different kinds of treatment. I mean, people don't just become typically anxious for no reason. There's something going on, or there's something not going on in our lives. And this is where, you know, talk therapy, good talk therapy, can be so valuable. And of course, finding a good therapist and getting a good referral, that's a whole other matter. But just, I really want you to think about, if you know someone that you love who's really suffering from anxiety or depression, and it doesn't seem to be really lifting, this is the day, this is the time perhaps that you can give them a call, or perhaps it's a reminder to yourself that there are treatments available that can really, really be helpful. You know, I know myself, if I'm feeling anxious or I'm feeling stressed, for me, the very, very two best things that I do, and I do on a regular basis, is that I talk to my husband, and I will be able to express in an enormous amount of detail, maybe too much detail at times, what it is that's stressing me out, what it is that may be making me feel really anxious. So the talking for me is something that is absolutely vital. Now, if you find, you know, in your close quarters that there is nobody to talk to, journaling can be really, really, really helpful. It is a way of getting out your feelings. And some patients of mine actually will record. They will speak into a tape recorder, and they will be able to express what it is that's going on and what it is that is not going on in their lives, and with my patients before their next session. So these are some ideas. And again, the recommendation that does not include patients 65 years and older in terms of doctors inquiring about anxiety disorders. I mean, that is really, it's an error, but it's much more than an error, especially since we're seeing substance abuse rates increase with seniors. We're talking about a loneliness epidemic, of course, not just for seniors who are losing friends, losing spouses, losing family members, getting sick. I mean, these people, including all of us, should be able to access mental health resources, you know, if we so desire them and if we so need them. So again, if you have a doctor's appointment in the next week or in the next few days or in the next few weeks, and you have been feeling anxious and stressed or depressed, and you just don't feel like you're doing well, and it worse, I mean, you may be feeling suicidal or having suicidal thoughts, please, 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 please take this in and give yourself permission and reach out and ask for help. So as we continue in our How Are You Doing weekly checkup, of course, I always ask you to think about how you are doing when it comes to your relationships and making sure that the people who you have in your life are people who care about you, people who are empathic and nurturing, and that you are not engaging in crazy making toxic roller coaster ride kinds of relationships. And we have to be honest with ourselves. And we make a lot of excuses for people's really, really bad behavior. And the more we do that, it is going to impact us. It is going to impact us emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically and physically. So again, be careful. Be very, very careful who you allow into your life. And if relationships are not working, I am the last person in the world who is saying, throw away everybody in your life where there are issues. I mean, for me, it's about fixing and mending. And I was saying to a couple last night who I was working with and who I've been working with for quite some time, the impasses that couples have really are almost, you know, if you compare them to the impasses that countries around the world have with one another, and yet successful diplomatic relationships can do so much, not only so much for the countries, but so much for the world. So again, it's about making sure that we obtain the necessary help so that we can get and hone the necessary skills to try to work things out with people who we want to have relationships with. And hopefully the people are going to be willing to engage in emotional communication and problem solving. And by the way, talking about emotional communication and problem solving, you know, when the book first came out, and that was in 2020, that was one of the first questions that interviewers on TV and radio would ask me. They'd say, well, Beanie, what do you think are the two most important relationships ingredients that actually make or break relationships? And there's no question about it that the ingredients are emotional communication and problem solving. So before you throw people away, at least try to see whether or not you can engage in productive, constructive conversation, which includes discussion and oftentimes compromise and trade-offs. Of course, we have to be careful what we're compromising on and what we're trading off on. The goal, as I was saying to this couple last night, who've had a lot of in-law issues that have been really, really playing havoc with the marriage, the goal for all of us, whether or not we're in business or whether or not we're talking about personal relationships with friends or with families or with lovers or with spouses, hopefully your lovers are your spouses, but the goal is to come up with a win-win resolution. It is not about winning and losing like in tennis. In tennis, I want to win. I want to beat my opponent 6-love. But in life, what we need to all try to do is to find the path to a win-win resolution. Okay, in other areas of how are you doing this week? Well, substance abuse. There's been a lot of talk, and I have not yet delved into it, but as a professional in the mental health world, I think I really need to find out a lot more about what's going on with psychedelics. Now, this is not an endorsement, but there's been a lot of talk about combining psychedelic treatment with talk therapy and, you know, in some cases, medication. And I'm just mentioning that because I've been reading more and more and more stories in the New York Times and elsewhere about integrating psychedelics into the mental health world of psychotherapy. So again, if you're interested, and I am very interested in this, I'm going to be doing a lot more reading. In fact, a very, very, very close friend of ours happens to be a world-renowned neuroscientist at Columbia University in New York City, Dr. Carl Hart. And I was saying to my husband, Jim, they've been friends for years, that when Dr. Hart and his wife, Robin, when they returned from Switzerland, they're in Switzerland right now doing some research, that these are long, long, long discussions that I would want to have with the number one person in the world, the expert in the world who's been doing experiments with psychedelics for many, many, many years. And this is another thing that I want to remind you, and also it's a reminder for me and for all of us. When we are seeking help, whether or not it's psychotherapy or sex therapy or legal help or dental help, we really, really have to be careful. You can't just go to the internet, and as many, many people do. I know that if I was looking for a particular kind of shoe, I think these days I also would look at the reviews, but it is not a very responsible way to be doing this. I mean, people buy reviews. It's so difficult to know really who you can trust, whether or not you're looking for a doctor or a lawyer or a dentist or a hairdresser for that matter. So again, the best advice that I can give myself and I can give you as well is to try, when you're needing, in quotes, real, true, bona fide expert help, that you do get a referral from somebody that you trust. I know that many, many, many people want to be guests on my show, and they're lovely people that I know that have varying degrees of expertise. And as you probably know, I don't have guests very, very often. And the guests that I do have are really tops in their field. They're ethical. I trust them. I trust the work that they are doing. So again, in all facets of our life, we have to be very, very careful who we are going to trust to put our lives and our bodies in their care. And when it comes to our physical health, it's the summer, and hopefully everybody is out there exercising and moving around, and that you're not at the computer, you know, most of the time. I mean, the statistics are telling us that people are just spending hours and hours and hours in gaming and looking and listening to videos and clips. It's enough to, for me, it's enough to make me crazy. And this is not something that I do. This is not something that I endorse. It's so important to take care of our physical health and make sure that we're getting enough sleep, that we are mindful of what we are eating. And if we are having any physical issues, that we definitely check them out sooner, you know, than later. So there are a lot of things, there are a lot of reminders that I remind you about every single week. And again, there is a theme here. And the theme is to try to encourage and motivate and inspire you to be living your life across the board, your work life, your personal life, your love life, in ways that are in your best interest. And this is the question. This is the question that I ask my patients, that I ask myself on a very, very regular basis. And there's one question: is this good for me? Is this, in fact, whatever this happens to be, is it good for me? Because it is very, very difficult at times to be truthful with ourselves. And yet it is our avoidance and denial and blame and self-blame and defensiveness that really keeps us in a downward spiral. And it keeps us from really, really being able to enjoy our lives. So we are going to move on. Hopefully your weekly checklist is a good, positive checklist, and that you're going to give yourself an A or an A+ for doing the things that are really beneficial to you across the board. Now, I don't know how many of you read the New York Times or have been reading all the articles, and I've been tackling some of this on the Ask Beatty Show about the epidemic of loneliness. And I wrote a piece for Dance Papers. As I mentioned, I'm the advice columnist for Dance Papers in the Hamptons and in Palm Beach, and I write two Ask Beatty columns a month. So I want you to know, I mean, and I want all of us to be aware that there really is an epidemic of loneliness here in the United States. And the Surgeon General, who is Vivek Murthy, he's a doctor. And what he has found, and it is good that this is all out there, that lacking in significant social connections can increase the risk for premature death to levels comparable to smoking, and get a load of this, 15 cigarettes a day. And what his research has found is that even before COVID, about half 50% of U.S. adults reported experiencing measurable levels of loneliness. And the research findings warned that the physical consequences, so it's not enough just being lonely and being depressed and being anxious, but that the physical consequences of poor connection, poor, I believe, face-to-face connection, if possible, can be devastating, including a 29% increased risk of heart disease, a 32% increased risk of stroke, and a 50% increased risk of developing dementia for older adults. Now, these are incredible. And that more than half of Americans are lonely, according to 2021, which also found that young adults, and this is something that, I mean, we would never have thought of before was happening, that young adults are almost twice as likely to report feeling lonely as those over the age of 65. Fatal overdoses have soared among seniors, which is why, you know, with the report on anxiety and where anxiety screening should be done, that people over 65 should not be eliminated and certainly should be given significant attention and thought when it comes to mental health issues. So from 22 to 2021, the rate of overdose death quadrupled. This is for seniors to 12 from 3% per 100,000, as it was reported in the JAMA Psychiatry in March 2023. And they were using the data from the CDC, from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And these deaths were both intentional, like suicide and accidental, reflecting drug interactions and errors. Now, we cannot claim that loneliness and isolation are the direct causes. You can't make that causal link of the increase in substance abuse among seniors. But what we can say is that people of all ages and stages in life who have substance abuse problems are more likely to experience loneliness than those living without addiction, and that they are often lacking. They're often lacking in close, intimate, loving connections and relationships. But I have good news, and it's not just airy, fairy good news. There have been a lot of recommendations that have actually come from the Surgeon General. He talks about the importance of strengthening our social infrastructure, the programs and policies. Of course, the proof is in the pudding, so we're going to see what happens politically, that aid the development of healthy relationships, including supporting more and more, I hope, school-based programs that teach children about building healthy relationships. And studies have found that individuals reported being happier on days that they had more interactions. Do you find that to be true for you? I mean, these are chit-chat. These are not heavy-duty, close, intimate, personal kinds of interactions. Do you find that you're happier if you're walking along the street and you say, hey, hi, what a lovely day, or isn't it a beautiful day? Does it make you happier? I don't know about you. It makes me happier. And I mean, other studies have found similar benefits that when people smiled, you know, how many people smile these days when you're walking around? And hopefully you are walking around and you're not just sitting in front of your screen. So the studies found similar benefits when people smiled and undertook brief conversations with a waiter or a waitress, or someone standing next to you in line at a bank or a grocery store. Do you like these kinds of interactions, or would you rather not talk to anybody? I guess I'm one of these people that if I'm standing in line, I guess I don't want to just stand in line and not say anything, so that I do find a way to reach out and have some chit-chat. Nothing serious, just informal kinds of chit-chat. And they call these weak ties. And they're not meant to be substitutes for family relationships and close friendships. But they apparently, and I think this is really, really interesting, they are strong predictors of well-being. And during the pandemic, we became accustomed to staying and oftentimes working from home, and our computers and our devices, right? They became our colleagues and our friends and even our family. And there were real dangers. And yes, that was exactly what we needed to do at that particular time. However, what has happened is that many, many people continue to do so, even though the risk of contracting COVID is minimal. And what I'm trying to encourage people to do is get out of our insular comfort zone and begin to engage in more person-to-person contacts with the outside world. You know, having said that, I mean, I haven't been to the Progressive Radio Network studio since I think it was in February. And the reason why I went is that I was absolutely dying to meet Dr. Andrew Solomon, who was a guest at that time and on the show, who'd been writing, you know, amazing and very disturbing articles about teenage depression, suicide, anxiety, and mental health issues. So he motivated me. And of course, I really wanted to meet a lot of the new producers at the studio. And it was so uplifting. I think it may have been cold, but, you know, I took the subway from the Upper West Side, and it was really, really nice. And this is a reminder to myself that perhaps instead of just doing the show from home, which is very convenient, and I have wonderful producers at the studio who make my life extraordinarily easy, maybe, you know, I need to really start to walk the walk and not just talk the talk when it comes to that as well. So I have 10 recommendations, okay? It's problem solution. And my question is, are you willing and ready to take steps to combat your loneliness and isolation? And if your answer is yes, and I hope that the answer is yes, here are some ideas. Number one, connect and reconnect with people who you genuinely like, who care about you and your well-being. Call them, reach out to them, make plans to get together. Number two, be open to making new in-person friendships and relationships. You know, we tend to shy away from making new person in-person, even on the computer, friendships. Be open to it. It can change your life in all kinds of wonderful ways. Number three, get involved in something that matters to you in your community. There are so many things. There are so many organizations in your particular community. So take some time with yourself and figure out what would you like to do. Maybe you've never done it. Maybe you've thought about doing it. So perhaps that now is a good time for you to connect and do something in your community that matters. Number four, most churches and synagogues offer in-person services and a variety of programs and activities where you can develop new interests. Now, you don't have to be religious. It's a way of connecting. It's a way of learning. It's a way of connecting. It's a way of meeting new people and possibly developing new relationships and friendships. Number five, don't hate me for this, but don't opt for Zoom when you can get dressed and get out of your apartment or house and enjoy face-to-face connections. Number six, volunteer in an organization that could really benefit from your help, because really and truly, in helping others, we invariably help ourselves. Number seven, if you happen to be homebound, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of online groups and lectures and activities where you will be able to connect with people, and where you can Zoom and you can FaceTime for those who cannot easily get out. And it definitely, definitely can be a lifesaver. Number eight, studies show that individuals report being happier on days that they had more positive interactions with others. So what about this? Try logging all of your interactions and see how much better you would feel. That would sort of be an interesting thing to do. Number nine, have you thought about relocating to a community where connections and relationships are a priority? I actually have a couple of patients who I started to treat in New York who moved to senior, in quotes, type communities in Florida, where connections and community have really, really worked out for them. So that could be a thought. And number 10, if you find that you have tried to implement some or all of these ideas and suggestions and that your feelings of loneliness and isolation persist, please, please, please give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help. Because things like you want to rule out possible clinical depression or even possible physical problems that may be really interfering with, definitely the quality of your life. And again, I know I say this all the time, but remember that we don't need to navigate life stressors on our own. And just think about this, that a second opinion from a qualified therapist or physician, doctor, could really be helpful in your quest for connection and happiness. And it really does make a difference. So that if you're feeling just lonely and disconnected and you're not sure exactly where to turn, I'm hoping that these suggestions will, you know, trigger a, okay, I'm willing to perhaps try this or try some of these things. I know that in the New York Times letters to the editor on Sunday, every single letter to the editor had to do with a response to an article that was written by a Eleanor Cummins and Andrew Seleski on how to treat loneliness. One of the suggestions that I did not mention that I thought was a really, really good suggestion, and this was written by a Laura Casper, who's an adjunct clinical assistant professor at Stanford School of Medicine's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences. Now, she talked about the benefits of group therapy, because when we think about therapy, or when I talk a lot about therapy, I'm mostly referring to individual therapy and family therapy and couples therapy, because these are the things that I do in my practice. But a number of years ago, I used to run groups. And group therapy, I mean, you can think about the 12-step programs. I mean, what a great way of tackling issues, acknowledging, addressing, and resolving various issues in the context of a group. So it's a real win-win kind of a situation. And this particular woman, she said that she was very saddened that the original essay in the New York Times, that it did not mention group therapy, is a highly, and she's right, she's absolutely right, effective evidence-based treatment modality for helping people to connect. Well, I have, as usual, I have a million different things that I wanted to talk about, which I'm going to tackle next week. For example, did you know that the 40-year-old American millennial breaks a new record? And that a quarter of them have never married, signifying a shifting norm. Not judgmental. This is something that we are going to be talking about. Another interesting article that I want to discuss next week is a strong case for banning phones in schools. I think it is a great, great, great idea. So again, the hour, it really goes by very, very quickly here on the Ask Beanie Show. And again, I can't thank you enough for tuning in every week as you do. I don't think we thank each other enough for the little things that people do for us. It's so easy to take so many things for granted. And, you know, what I find is that it is important, it certainly makes me feel really, really good, to express appreciation to people in our lives, whether it is a bank teller or whether it is, you know, somebody that's just looked at you and perhaps smiled at you and said hello to you, to express appreciation and gratitude for all the small little things that happen and that people are able to give us. It's important. So again, I express my gratitude and appreciation to all of you for listening to the Ask Beanie Show every week. Well, I want to leave you with my two Ask Beanie weekly messages and reminders. The first one, of course, is to think about what you're doing as you navigate your days, and remember to ask yourself the question, is this good for me? And am I living my life in ways as best as I can that are in my best interest? And it's not selfish. It is being smart, and it's being constructive, and it is self-protective. And the second thing, of course, that we need to remind ourselves more than we probably all do is that we all need to do a much, 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 much better job in learning to accept and in learning to love each other. So I hope you have a really good rest of the day. And I want to thank you, my producers at the Progressive Radio Network studio, for always being there for me and being supportive. And I cannot tell you how I appreciate you and how much it means to me. So again, goodbye, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good day. Have a good week. And take good care of yourself. Bye-bye.